Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you missed our special edition podcast that we ran earlier in the week, I urge you to listen to it. We had Dr. Centano on talking about symptoms of the coronavirus and ways to treat it. It was a really great podcast. A lot of folks listened. I want to thank you all for listening. This week, we're going to have on Gordon Chang, again, continuing our China deep dive, and we're going to talk about the history of the coronavirus and our great friend President Xi and all the wonderful things he's been doing to help the United States and our allies. Of course, you can hear the sarcasm in my voice because I am being completely sarcastic. Before we get to that, I want to thank all of you who have sent in questions, who have called in and left questions. We've gone through those questions, and we were going to do that episode this Friday, but we're probably going to save it till next Friday unless we're continuing with the coronavirus situation. We may have to postpone it again, but we're planning on at least doing one, if not two, sessions answering all of your questions. But once again, thank you all for listening. So without further ado, Gordon Chang, one of the nation's experts on China. Gordon, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being on. Thanks for all you do.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Congressman.
So let's walk back. Let's do a timeline. When is the first time that you, Gordon, as somebody who follows China closely, that you picked up that there might be something going on in the Wuhan province dealing with a virus?
This was sometime around Christmas. We started getting reports of a pneumonia-like disease, something like SARS, the severe acute respiratory syndrome, which ravaged China and the world in 2002, 2003. But clearly, Chinese authorities knew something was up well before this, because the first case was diagnosed on December 8th, according to the World Health Organization. But there were indications that Chinese officials knew that there was a pneumonia-like disease in November. So this has started to circulate among people in Wuhan, which is in central China, sometime in like the third and fourth week of November.
Okay. And can you talk to us, Gordon, about a lot of the hot spots around the globe now, including the West Coast of the United States, other places? And you mentioned that Wuhan is in the central part of China. What about the stories we hear of how many direct flights, or roughly where do the direct flights go from Wuhan? Because I've heard they actually go into northern Italy. I've heard there's actually a couple flights that came into the West Coast. Can you separate fact from fiction on flights out of Wuhan and where they went to?
Well, for your state, California, it's been reported that at LAX, the Los Angeles airport, there were about 40 to 50 people from Wuhan coming into LAX. And these were not necessarily direct flights, but they were flights. These were people transiting perhaps through Shanghai, maybe other places, but coming into the United States in one airport, which showed
you. And that's per day? That's per day, Gordon?
Per day. Okay. And that showed you that there was significant travel between the central part of China and California. And this is important because, you know, many people were carrying some sort of disease. That's the reason why, for instance, South Korea, Iran, and Italy have been crippled, because there was significant air traffic between China and those countries. And indeed, Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, prevailed upon countries to keep their airports open to Chinese travelers. This is specifically the case with South Korea. South Korea's President Moon Jae-in said that the Koreans and Chinese were brothers and that they would, in Korea, share the suffering of the Chinese people. Well, they certainly did, Devin, and we can see that it's air travel that has been primarily responsible for this disease leaving China and hobbling other parts of the world.
And what do you know about anecdotal evidence? Folks talk about that they've been to Milan and northern Italy, and they say that many of the manufacturing businesses there, especially in clothing, have been taken over by the Chinese, and some estimate that there's around 100,000 Chinese in that northern Italy area. Do you agree with those assessments, and do you agree with those stories?
That number sounds about right. We know that the luxury brands have employed significant numbers of Chinese in Italy so that they can talk about made in Italy, but nonetheless, they can reduce their costs. And that's one of the reasons why Italy has been hit especially hard because of the significant proportion of Chinese workers there. And there was travel back from China around the time of the Lunar New Year, and that's the reason why Italy was hit so hard.
And they actually have many Chinese foreign nationals that are there working with work permit visas. Is that what you understand?
That's right. The Chinese workers are in Italy legally, and that's why you have a significant portion of Chinese in Italy, and that's why you have what on the surface nominally looks like great relations between Rome and Beijing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then fast forward in December, that's the first you're hearing about it, by early January, then we start seeing the reports of massive hospitals being built overnight, which I think then really increased the panic level that led President Trump to stop all flights at the end of January. Walk our listeners through the month of January of this year, Gordon.
What happened is on January 3, and this was not reported until February, and that is that China's National Health Commission ordered the authorities in Wuhan to start destroying samples of coronavirus in order to hide the epidemic. Essentially, this epidemic spread around China. People were not aware until January 20. That's when People's Daily, which is the most authoritative publication in China, carried an article with Xi Jinping's quote-unquote important instructions about the epidemic. That's the first real acknowledgement by the central authorities of what was going on. There were some scattered reports in December, but they were very short notices. No one really paid very much attention to them. So you essentially have from December 8th, the diagnosis of the first patient, through January 20, when the Communist Party hid this from authorities. The mayor in Wuhan actually said he told the central authorities about the severity of the problems in his city, but couldn't do anything because he wasn't getting instructions. And to put this in context, Devin, we have on January 19th, Wuhan holds a potluck dinner for 40,000 families in order to get into the Guinness World Book of Records. If you're trying to design an event to spread disease, you'd come up with a potluck dinner for so many people. And it was only on the following day did the central authorities decide to actually talk about this with the Chinese people.
Wow. So that potluck dinner occurs January 20?
The potluck dinner was the 19th. January 20 was a significant date because that's when People's Daily carries Xi Jinping's instructions to the Chinese
people. Yeah, just to reiterate, the People's Daily is run by the Communist Party in China. It is their mouthpiece. So clearly, it's always propaganda. So then right after that is when we get the pictures emerge of these emergency hospital skyscrapers being built. That happens right after that, correct, Gordon?
That's right. And the other significant date in January, from our perspective, is that on the last day, January 31, President Trump imposes the travel restrictions and quarantines on China. And this is critical because, as we talked about with Italy and South Korea, it was air travelers that brought the disease which crippled those countries. President Trump made sure it didn't happen to the United States. And we got to remember that Trump got tremendous incoming, not only from Beijing, but also domestic critics for imposing those travel restrictions. If he had not done that on the 31st of January, we would look like Iran, South Korea, Italy now. What President Trump did, and this was the most important decision that has been made since that time, was to impose those restrictions on travel. And that's why we had the time in order to develop a response.
Well, sometimes you wonder if the 90% of our mainstream media is not identical to the Chinese People's Daily, because it's quite incredible that Trump was attacked by not only the entire Democratic Party, but by most in the press calling him, that he was being racist against Chinese people. And Gordon, not that people know Gordon Chang is a Chinese name. Obviously, you're a Chinese American, and I think your wife was actually born in China, if I remember. So, Gordon, you have no problem as a Chinese American calling this coronavirus a Chinese coronavirus, correct?
I have no problem at all. For instance, Devin, you talk about the media propagating Beijing's line. On Wednesday during the press conference, President Trump got a hostile question about this very issue, about calling the coronavirus the Chinese virus. And it's very important that the president do this. And the reason is, the Chinese Foreign Ministry and Global Times, which is controlled by People's Daily, from about the end of the first week of February, have been engaged in a relentless campaign to tar the United States, to blame it for disease in general. They've gone back to 2009 and swine flu, H1N1. And on Thursday of last week, we heard a foreign ministry spokesman in a tweet actually say that patient zero for the coronavirus was an American in America, and that intimating that the virus was spread to Wuhan by the U.S. Army, thereby suggesting germ warfare. This same foreign ministry spokesman called the U.S. immoral. We saw a tweet from another foreign ministry spokesman on that day, which was twisting the testimony of the CDC head. This was really dangerous stuff, Devin. And if I may go on for just a little bit more, Friday, the State Department actually called in the Chinese ambassador to complain about this disinformation campaign. But this week, the Chinese foreign ministry, and we've seen this with the tweets from the Chinese ambassador to South Africa, has continued this dangerous campaign trying to blame the U.S. for the spread of the coronavirus.
Well, and you have the same situation, Gordon, where you have many in the mainstream media who were calling it a virus from China. Then when Trump banned the flights, they all of a sudden went out and started calling President Trump a racist and any Republicans who said that this thing originated from China. I mean, it's the craziest damn thing. These people have gone totally nuts. But we could stick on that for a while, Gordon. But I want to make sure that our listeners continue to get the facts because you know so many of them. So if you look now at the hotspots around the U.S. where we have the most people infected, it happens to also be where those flights were coming into. I think I know your answer to this, but how well do you believe the data coming out of China and through the World Health Organization of the people that were infected, knowingly infected, and died? What type of value do you give to that data?
Well, the statistics we're getting from China on new infections and deaths is unreliable. And it's been unreliable for a number of reasons. First of all, and the most important one, is that the Communist Party has tried to hide the severity of the outbreak. They did that in the early stages, that December 8th to January 20th period that we just talked about. They've also done that starting from especially January 26th when the Communist Party appointed its task force on this. It's a 9-member task force. Only one of those 9 members is a public health official, and her degree is actually in mechanics or something like that. The task force is heavy with political hacks and with propaganda types. The vice chairman of the task force is the Communist Party's propaganda czar. And clearly what China has been doing is it's been trying to control the narrative. That was much more important than ending the disease. So we know that these numbers that come out of China are not reliable. One other thing. In the early stages of this disease in Wuhan, I think that another factor that undercuts the reliability of the numbers is that the healthcare system was overwhelmed. Healthcare workers were just trying to deal with the corpses that littered the streets and hospital floors, and they were not particularly concerned about the accuracy of information. They were just completely overwhelmed. So you have those two factors together. It means that China's numbers severely understate the number of deaths and infections.
Yeah, I think probably the only thing of value that we can get out of there is that it really impacted the senior generation hard, especially those that were heavy smokers or had respiratory issues. Other than that, I've advised that I don't really care what the World Health Organization is reporting and the CHICOMs are reporting. I'm ignoring that as not accurate or reliable data. Am I reading that correctly?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. Apparently, China has bought the World Health Organization. We see the top officials parroting Beijing's lines, even talking about the superiority of China's totalitarian system. This is really disgusting stuff, Devin. And we've seen the World Health Organization also do something else, and that it, in the early stages of this disease, the WHO took China's position and said that countries should not impose travel restrictions on China. And this was China's line because it wanted to maintain its linkages with other countries. The WHO supported that. The WHO was very slow to first declare an emergency and then to declare a pandemic. Really, we should look at China's relationship with that organization. And even defunding it would not be a bad idea. We can take the technical staff, put them into another grouping. But right now, we have a WHO, which is essentially an arm of the Chinese Communist Party.
Right, and all the geniuses in the Democratic Party press started parroting that and saying that, well, the World Health Organization isn't saying to stop these flights. It's absolutely amazing. And these are the same crazies that are out there blaming President Trump and the Republican Party for a mess that, had we listened to them, would have been a total and complete disaster. Gordon, what happened to the Chinese doctor who blew the whistle? Where did he go? How did he die? What happened?
You're referring to Dr. Li Wenliang. He was one of the so-called Wuhan 8. These were 8 doctors that started going on to WeChat, which is a social media platform in China, warning people of the disease. They were all brought in to the authorities in Wuhan, forced to write confessions, to retract their statements. They were harassed. Dr. Li died on February 7th. When they first reported his death on the day before, social media across China went white hot, angry. So the Communist Party said, no, he hadn't died. And eventually they came around and said, yes, in fact, he had expired. He has become a martyr, as you can imagine. He was young at the time of his death, 33, 34. He was one of those health workers who was completely exhausted, and he is now a hero. And he's, of course, in memory, a threat to Communist Party stability, because people are now demanding fundamental political reform in China because they can see what happened when the Communist Party completely mishandled the coronavirus epidemic.
And follow up on the Wuhan 8. So he's one of the 8. Where are the other 7? And what have they been saying?
The other 7 are still alive, but they've been quiet. And that's because the party has imposed extraordinary controls.
And so, these were all doctors, right?
These were all medical professionals and doctors, yes.
Mm-hmm. Scary stuff, Gordon. So now we're in the month of March. We don't trust the numbers coming out of China. I believe we trust the ones out of South Korea. If you look at South Korea, they had a problem with one city there, but seems like they've managed to get it under control there. What are the bright spots that you see coming out of the South Korea challenges and how they've dealt with the problem and where they're at today?
Well, South Korea has a problem because of its president, who is very pro-China, very anti-American. But South Korea has a very well-developed healthcare system. And the reason is it had to respond to both SARS and MERS, which are related coronavirus diseases. And those really helped South Korea develop its emergency responses, which is also to a certain extent true for Canada, because they had a SARS problem. We were very fortunate not to have that. So right now we've got a South Korea that is recovering.
That's great, Gordon. Well, now we're in March. South Korea is recovering. Hopefully we here in the United States are beginning to recover. I think there's plenty of tests now, and I think people are beginning to understand the symptoms and the best treatments. But Gordon, you've been just a treasure for us to have on our podcast. I know you're always on John Batchelor's podcast and on Fox News, and I just can't thank you enough. And unfortunately, we're probably going to have you on again, because I'm sure our favorite bad actors in the Chi-Com government are going to be back at it again. So Gordon, thanks a lot for appearing today.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Congressman.
This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams. Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We've started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith. Not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard working family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. We the people, free and strong. us, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days, 'cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.